From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Pablo Arauz-Peña with your state and local news update. The president of the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium has resigned, the organization said today. Andy Tuber had been ANTHC's president since 2008. The consortium's board of directors called a special meeting for this afternoon to discuss who will replace Tuber, spokeswoman Shirley Young said in a statement. The statement did not say what prompted Tuber's resignation, and he didn't respond to a request for comment. Tuber sat on the University of Alaska Board of Regents as well. A university spokeswoman said he resigned that position today, effective immediately. Tuber also serves as chief executive of Kodiak's tribal health care provider, the Kodiak Area Native Association. Officials there didn't immediately respond to questions about Tuber's status in that job. ANTHC is an umbrella group that coordinates health care for Alaska Native people and helps run the Anchorage Native Hospital. It's also one of the state's largest employers with more than 3,000 workers. This is the second recent high-profile tribal health resignation. Catherine Gottlieb, the former chief executive of South Central Foundation, resigned in August. In another news, Mount Edgecombe High School celebrated Gil Truitt Day today and will honor the Tlingit elder and local historian this evening with a plaque dedication and tribute. The holiday has been part of the school's Founders Week celebrations for years, but it's particularly poignant this year, the first since the death of the former teacher and administration last July. In Sitka, KCAW's Aaron McKinstry has this remembrance.
When Bernie Gurley became principal of Mount Edgecombe High School, one of the first people he talked to was Dr. Gil Truitt.
He emphasized to me that Mount Edgecombe High School is more than just a school. It's more than just a boarding school. Mount Edgecombe High School is an institution. Mount Edgecombe High School is a family.
For Truitt, supporting students like family meant holding them to high standards around self-discipline, academic achievement, and personal conduct.
He went on to say, Mr. Gurley, many of our students come from hard lives and tough backgrounds. We will not lower our standards or our expectations. And more importantly, Bernie, we will not allow anybody else to do so.
It's advice that Gurley says has shaped his approach as academic principal of the school. And it's just one of Dr. Truitt's many legacies. He spent 34 years working as a teacher, basketball coach, and administrator at the school.
His place at Mount Edgecombe High School and the significance of his place really can't be overstated.
Dionne Brady Howard is a former student of Truitt's and a current teacher at Mount Edgecombe High School. She remembers his lectures on sportsmanship and school pride. They're conversations that Brady Howard continues to have with her students to this day.
We are kind of like their borrowed parents for their 1 to 4 years that they spend at Mount Edgecombe. And so those conversations are probably some of the most important education that actually happens.
Truitt was part of Mount Edgecombe High School's first graduating class. He was also instrumental in getting the legislature to reopen the boarding school after the Bureau of Indian Affairs closed it in 1983. But his legacy extends beyond Mount Edgecombe High School. He was also a local historian and shared his knowledge with the community in his Sitka Sentinel column, Gill Nettings.
He was actually the caretaker of a lot of knowledge about Sitka's history, about Sitka's history as far as Native families and, you know, which clan houses were where and belonged to whom and which families were connected with one another and how.
Truitt grew up in Sitka's Cottage Settlement, a Native community that stood on Presbyterian mission land at the time. By the age of 15, he'd lost both of his parents.
But my dad never lived his life as a victim.
Ken Truitt is one of Dr. Truitt and his wife Shirley's three children. He says that although his father faced prejudice growing up in a highly segregated town, he wasn't bitter.
He also, at real critical moments in his life, experienced just extraordinary generosity and support.
After losing his mother, he was accepted at the BIA school in Wrangell, but he had no money to pay the fare to get there. A Sitka businessman stepped in to help. When he couldn't afford tuition at Harding University in Arkansas, his basketball coach collected donations from Sitka organizations, Native and non-Native.
I think he had this real sense of a debt to the entire community, and a debt in not a bad way, but in a debt that he was going to be committed to always working to make Sitka a better place.
Ken will always remember his father for his open affection, his subversive sense of humor, and his love of sports. Dr. Truitt received countless awards throughout his lifetime, including a President's Lifetime Achievement Award from the Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska, and multiple Hall of Fame inductions. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Erin McKinstry.
You may not have heard much about the Southeast Alaska fishing town of Pelican over the past year, or the indigenous Aleutian Island of village of Atka. Those places have stayed out of the news because they're some of the few Alaska communities that have made it through the whole pandemic so far without a single confirmed case of COVID-19. And as Nat Herz with Alaska Public Media reports, some of those communities have vaccinated enough people to be close enough to reaching herd immunity.
If you fly into the Bering Sea Island village of St. Paul right now, a van will meet you at the airport, says Amos Filmanoff, president of the island's tribal government.
And the driver's all decked out in, a white suit, mask, gloves, the whole nine yards, and he delivers you back to whatever house or facility you're going to be locked down in for 2 weeks.
To put it another way, the island is not messing around with COVID-19. At one point, Filimonov says, a charter plane full of seafood processing workers arrived unannounced. They were delivered to their boat on the back of a flatbed truck. While some residents of road system communities have mounted angry resistance to local health mandates, Filimonov says that's not happening in St. Paul.
I haven't had anybody calling me up, saying that this is too restrictive or this is BS or anything like that. It's just, people have been complying.
With 500 residents, St. Paul is one of Alaska's largest communities with zero confirmed coronavirus cases since the start of the pandemic. And roughly half of its adult population has been vaccinated. But it's not the only place to record such impressive numbers.
Everybody claims that it's so hard to get in and out of here. I say, that's perfect. There is no better time to be stranded in what people call the middle of nowhere, because I call it heaven.
Walt Weller is mayor of the tiny and famously remote Southeast Alaska fishing town of Pelican, which is more than half vaccinated and has also seen zero confirmed cases among its 75 winter residents. For years, Pelican's leaders have objected to cuts to state-sponsored ferry service, but Weller acknowledges that a months-long gap in visits last year probably helped keep the virus out. He says the island town has taken COVID-19 seriously, closing some buildings and encouraging hand washing and mask wearing, but he attributes most of Pelican's success to its isolation.
Half the people here almost never left here anyway. They're not going to have you tell them that they're not going to go over to grandma's house, which they do have done every Sunday their whole lives. Okay.
Alaska has at least 10 communities that have made it through a full year of COVID with no cases. And there are likely more, as the state health department won't release data about villages with fewer than 1,000 people, citing privacy considerations. Many of the communities like Pelican and St. Paul are on islands or otherwise hard to get to, and many have also adopted strict travel and other health mandates. Dr. Ann Zink, Alaska's chief medical officer, says she thinks there's also a degree of luck involved.
But we also know that mitigation strategies work, and it's been pretty amazing to see some of these smaller communities work incredibly close together and collaboratively to be able to keep COVID out of their communities and what that does to protect elders and to protect others.
Zink says she's always worried about declaring victory too early, but she acknowledges that some of the communities with no COVID cases might actually be nearing that point, as vaccination rates in certain places have hit as high as 90% of adults. On St. Paul, Filimonov, the tribal president, says residents aren't letting their guard down. He says discussions are starting about the summertime and whether it will be safe for tourists to visit, maybe in a closed bubble. But in the meantime, there's no escaping the need for hand sanitizer.
Never seen so many damn dispensers for hand wash in my life, but they're everywhere. And, it's learning to live the new normal. And I hope that someday soon this thing is just like the flu.
For now, St. Paul residents are sticking to social distancing and wearing masks in public buildings, too, Filimonov says. In Anchorage, I'm Nat Herz.
Trident Seafood's huge processing plant on the remote Aleutian Island of Akutan reopened on Friday after nearly a month-long COVID-19 enclosure. at an outbreak at the plant forced the fishing giant to close the facility in late January, just as the lucrative winter season was set to kick off. 45% of Trident's 700-person workforce ultimately tested positive for the virus. Trident said in a statement on Monday that surveillance testing, symptom screenings, and the use of PPE and distance protocols continue and will remain throughout the season. You can read more about this story at ktoo.org. This is KTOO News.